I think we just start right away.
Okay, so what exactly are we doing though? So
oh, I'm just asking you some questions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. the most of them you're anyhow quite familiar with, mm-hmm, I would say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
And just a little chit-chat, it's more or less. And,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so first of all, congratulations on the 10th anniversary. I'm
okay.
Sure
mm-hmm.
You got a lot of happy remarks on that.
Uh-huh.
And now it's been 10 years since you and Rob Weinberg actually published this very well-known paper, like almost every student until every professor knows, The Hallmark of Cancer. And so it was a paper that for the first time summarized the characteristics of cancer cells. And I'm sure you have been asked these questions a thousand of times, but I have to ask it too.
Okay.
Did you think that 10 years later, the concept of tumor development and how normal cells can become converted into cancer cells is still valid?
Well, I think, well, certainly the notion of that cancers arise out of normal cells is of course undeniable, right? Because, I mean, we... You know, the normal people, normal tissues and normal cells evolve into many kinds of disease states, including neoplastic ones and cancer. So that's I think, not so surprising. Certainly what is surprising is the endurance of this simplification that Bob Weinberg and I conceived, because cancer is such an extraordinarily complex set of diseases. I mean, it comes up in different organs, with different genetic characteristics, with different pathological characteristics, with different effects on the individual that has the disease. So it's daunting in its complexity, that even within a particular cancer type, there can be, you know, many, many variations from one person to another, and so it's in many ways hard to think about because it's so complicated. And so I think that, you know, we took sort of a reductionist approach to say, well, is this complexity reflecting different ways or different ways and means to the same end? In other words, can't most tumors need, just like an automobile engine needs a number of things in terms of operating, or any kind of a machine, it has component parts that it needs in order to function. And, you know, I think the simplification was to look at tumors as machines and to say, okay, well, for a tumor to grow and without control and to migrate and to cause the trouble that it causes, it has to have certain capabilities, much like any machine has capabilities, and so that was, I think, the concept that we raised, is that maybe this diversity of tumors simply reflects different strategies to acquire the same basic capabilities, and it was an idea. It was far from clear that it would be an enduring one, and it was certainly, we didn't imagine that this review would be as popular as it is and as enduring as it is.
Yeah.
And certainly there are many qualifications to the simplification, and there are tumors where other things are going on, and there are tumors where one or another of these hallmarks may not be so important, but the conceptualization has obviously endured, and which is quite remarkable.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And did it also, like 10 years later now, how far are we now in all this kind of understanding the nature of cancer, and what did improve or develop back then, in comparison to back then?
Well, certainly there's been an explosion of knowledge in the last decade, and there have been new concepts developed that were unappreciated at the time. For example, the importance of heterogeneity in tumors, in particular in the form of cancer stem cells. In 2000, although cancer stem cells had been documented in leukemias a few years before, there was no sense that this was a general principle that tumors had cells which within them in variable proportions that seemed to have characteristics of normal tissue stem cells. And so that was a concept that was not discussed a decade ago. It spawned a whole field, separate meetings, companies, and so that was unappreciated at the time. And there's other things that were unappreciated. In fact, faculty in this institute are working on autophagy, which is a specialized form of recycling in cells, which allows cells to adapt to stressful conditions. And a decade ago, it was unappreciated that autophagy could be an important facet to how the tumor machine operates and how it adapts and how it evolves. And so the notion we posed a decade ago that avoiding programmed cell death or apoptosis was an essential capability if you were going to grow up to be a tumor, I think holds, but now one has to sort of evolve that concept to say it's more than just limiting this particular form of cell death, but there are many forms of cell death that need to be modulated in one way or another, that this may be a complex balance between limiting cell death, but not necessarily preventing it altogether. Another area that's really spawned a whole field is inflammation and cancer. The notion that cells of the immune system basically inadvertently help tumors to grow and progress to malignancy rather than attacking the tumors as we might have imagined. And there were clues to this a decade ago. Now it's undeniable that inflammation is a major factor in promoting tumor progression and promoting malignant phenotypes. And so yeah, there have been many, but it hasn't changed the basic outlines of the hallmark concepts. So inflammation helps tumors to acquire many of these hallmark capabilities. It helps them proliferate, helps them to induce angiogenesis, helps them to become invasive, and helps them to metastasize. So it's in essence, we've learned more about how you can acquire some of these capabilities. But no one seems to deny the core capabilities, although there are those who have added a seventh and an eighth a hallmark, and that remains, I think, an interesting question. For example, another area that's become very, very popular is metabolism, and how tumors, in essence, in order to grow rapidly, to proliferate constantly, most cells in tissues have a day job which involves not proliferating but doing something for an organ and hence for the organism. But cancer cells reprogram metabolism to fuel growth, to make biomaterials and energy to fuel growth. And although this was realized in the 20s by Otto Warburg, it's been largely ignored in the era of oncogenes and tumor suppressors. But now in the last decade, metabolism has developed as a whole interesting facet of the tumor machine. However, it remains unclear about whether altered metabolism is a discrete capability, or rather a manifestation of the core capabilities, for example, to proliferate. And so oncogenes that induce cell proliferation and the proliferative hallmark also induce reprogramming of energetics. Tumor suppressors, which normally suppress proliferation, also suppress these alternative energy reprogramming activities. And so when you lose a tumor suppressor, you can reprogram metabolics when you turn on an oncogene. And so we're learning interesting new aspects to how the mechanistically these capabilities are acquired and what the capabilities are in a deeper sense. But so far it's not clear that there are any undeniable, absolutely clear and convincing new capabilities.
Yeah.
So, which is interesting. And,
yeah.
But on the other hand, if you you will find that an active. They're not all would agree with that, but it's. I think it's that's sort of our current view on this.
Yeah, and this brings me already to the next question. Would it you guys? Oh, I mean, the two of you. I've just read some rumors, or that there might be a second edition on this Hallmark of Cancer paper, or.
Yes, indeed. The sequel is imminent. we've actually been working on the sequel since 2006, and because by 2004, 2005, it was already clear that it was a big success. I mean, there were 4,000 citations, which was unimaginable to us at the time we wrote it. There were 20,000 PDFs being downloaded from the Cell website per year. Mm. Which is arguably a bestseller. Unfortunately, we didn't get any royalties from any of that. But so we started, so that actually was suggested to us, and we were thinking with all this explosion of knowledge that we should update this. But we've been burdened by the success of the original. So it's like a great movie. I mean, how many sequels are up to the original? And so we've been burdened by the weight of the success of the original, but nevertheless we have been working for the last 4 years this sequel, and we are just about done. And in fact, I think we will be done by the end of this year. We were hoping to be done in time for it to be published in 2010.
Yeah.
But that has, for many reasons which are not worth discussing, is not happening. But the most important thing, I think, is that it's a worthy successor, and I think it will be a worthy successor.
Yeah. We have something to look forward to.
In
for
2011,
sure. 2011, yeah. 2011. And dealing with the fundamental principle of cancer cell, it's still hard for me personally to imagine that one day we might be able to cure cancer, or at least some forms of it, since all aspects of a cell machinery are manipulated by the cancer cell's own concept of proliferation, right? So you have to treat a lot of different targets within the cells, plus the predisposition of patients. So how good are chances of finding drugs that successfully can cure tumors in each and every patient?
Well, obviously that is a major challenge. And, the sobering reality as, in this last decade, one of the other exciting dynamics has been, again, very much based on this philosophy that if you understood how the machine works, then you could design specific ways to interfere with it. And so the whole notion of targeted therapies has been extraordinarily exciting, and with a variety of targeted therapies hitting the market and going into clinical trials and clinical practice. But the sobering reality is that the tumors are very adaptable, and so what we're seeing is that many of these targeted therapies work for a while, but then the tumors, they don't just disappear. What happens is that they shrink, they become small, they may be latent for a while, but then they rebound, and they basically find ways to circumvent the magic bullet. And so that, on the one hand, is depressing. On the other hand, the other sort of awakening is, for cancer scientists, is the notion that resistance is actually very interesting. So if you start looking now at the mechanisms of resistance to these targeted therapies, you start to learn that they are very instructive about the nature of how the machine works. So I think that in some sense, there must be a limited number of such adaptive mechanisms. And so the thinking is that if we are able to understand the adaptations, we may be able to essentially target the adaptations as well as the primary targets. And the second one being this whole notion, which was evident in 2000, is really self-evident now, and that is the notion that tumors are aberrant organs and that they can script normal cells to serve them, and that those cells of the tumor microenvironment also represent attractive targets. And so I think it's reasonable to foresee that we will be able to target certain human tumors much more effectively than we are now by understanding how the machine works and also how it adapts to the pressures of these targeted therapies. And that if we can understand the resistance mechanisms, we can potentially, there can't be that many of them, and that if we can understand them and detect them, maybe we can target them and therefore produce more enduring responses.
That sounds very exciting, and I hope it'll work someday. And since we are running out of time, I just have my last question, and it's always a one that is a little bit more personal. So what are you doing actually when you're not thinking of cancer? I just learned you are growing orchids, or you go for sailing, or at least maybe this is what you used to do. Mm-hmm. So is there any time in your busy schedule to enjoy life outside the lab?
Oh yeah, well I have younger teenage children, and so it's great to spend time with them. We play tennis, we like skiing, we like sailing and boating, and I grow orchids, and so yeah, I do find some time for other things.
And Lausanne is also the right place for it.
So it's close to the Alps, and the Lake Geneva is spectacular for summer sports. So we're enjoying learning about the new microenvironment.
That was a very nice ending to this interview. Thank you very much, Douglas Hanahan. And hope to see you soon, maybe in 10 years or 20 years, or there will be an encyclopedia, you never know. Thank you very much. Okay,
Okay.
Give the...